Prime Minister Narendra Modi and his Israeli counterpart Benjamin Netanyahu talked of shared priorities and a partnership that they said can help global peace and stability. After holding back-to-back meetings over 4 hours and signing several deals, seven in fact in all, including pacts on agriculture and water management. The Prime Minister has invited the Israeli Prime Minister and his wife to India, an invitation that was accepted immediately. This is the first visit to Israel by an Indian Prime Minister, which is why, of course, it's so significant.
More bear hugs, seven agreements,
my friend Prime Minister,
and a joint statement, as Prime Minister Modi and Israel's PM Benjamin Netanyahu met for formal talks. The focus was on how to make this first visit by an Indian Prime Minister a substantive one.
What a great day. The first day of a historic journey. This is a deeply moving moment for me. It's a marriage, really, made in heaven, but we're implementing it here on earth.
Never mind that the Israeli Prime Minister said the exact same thing to China's Xi Jinping earlier this year. Greater cooperation on terror was one of the big takeaways.
India has suffered firsthand the violence and hatred spread by terror. So as Israel. Prime Minister Netanyahu and I agreed to do much more together to protect our strategic interests.
We're being challenged by the forces of terror, the forces of terror that seeks to undermine our world, our countries.
The joint statement calls for taking strong measures against terror organizations, their networks, and all those who encourage, support, and finance terrorism or provide sanctuary to terrorists. The establishment of a strategic partnership on water and agriculture, focusing on water conservation and wastewater management, reaffirms the importance of defense cooperation with a special emphasis on Make in India, asks India-Israel CEO Forum to come up with early recommendations for boosting trade and investment, and called for greater collaborations between startups and setting up of an India-Israel R&D Innovation Fund.
In the new world order, India is navigating new relationships, and in this relationship with Israel is trying to move beyond the traditional defense and security paradigm, which is why a strategic partnership in areas like water and agriculture has been established. The question is now how the two countries can build on this in the coming years.
Let me also take this chance to invite you.
The Prime Minister invited Netanyahu to India and he accepted.
Thank you, and I accept.
With Nidhi Razdan in Jerusalem, Soumya Menon, NDTV.
Right, and a special fan, of course, joining us in just a bit. But before that, I spoke earlier with the diplomat and Congress leader Shashi Tharoor just a while back. I began by asking him about a trip that's being described as historic and groundbreaking. How significant is it? Of course, it shows a sign of maturity. It's almost become a cliche to say that this is a coming out moment for both countries.
Well, look, undoubtedly, whenever an Indian Prime Minister goes to any country for the first ever time, that is historic. So I don't think it's an unfair word to use. And I personally have no difficulty with acknowledging that what the Prime Minister has done is an important step forward in giving a certain sense of normality and maturity to this relationship with Israel, which undoubtedly has been a relationship of considerable value to India over the years. Our only concern in the Congress Party, which is obviously very instrumental in having contributed to the momentum that has brought India and Israel to this point, our only concern has been that it's extremely important to ensure that this does not come at the expense of our long-standing commitment and principled support for the Palestinian cause. So far, I see no reason for anxiety on that score, other than the fact that the government has, of course, broken with tradition and practice in asking the Prime Minister to go to one country and not the other, which is certainly not what any previous Indian foreign minister or cabinet minister would have done. But this dehyphenation cannot necessarily be a bad thing, provided the Arab countries' sensitivities have been addressed in advance. I don't know that it has, but I would like to believe that our MEA will have done their homework and will have made sure that other countries don't have their noses out of joint because of what we're doing. Certainly the Palestinian president, Mahmoud Abbas, Abu Mazen, was in Delhi just in May, and I'm sure that that he was told about this visit coming up and that it was not meant to be in any way a dilution of commitment to his cause. I'm assuming that all of this has been done. And if so, then I think we'll be all right.
Right, we'll be all right. But perhaps one reason why we haven't really been hearing much from the Arab world, even diplomatic circuit really, has been the Iran factor. How significant do you believe that is? Of course, Pakistan has some terse words in editorials, which is, of course, to be expected.
Well, look, Iran obviously has a very, very major enmity with Israel. We've had Iranian presidents like Ahmadinejad openly calling for death to Israel and that sort of slogan. And the Israelis feel particularly targeted by Iran. There was an accusation that an attack on an Israeli diplomat at a traffic light in Delhi a few years ago had actually been conducted by Iranian operatives. So that is one country that is going to be very unhappy with our move. But on the other hand, we don't allow any of our bilateral relationships to be hostage to the views of a third country. We haven't allowed any one country to dictate to us what we can do with another. And so I'm afraid that that is something which, as long as we have told the Iranians that this is not about them, this should not unduly put us off. With the Arab countries, many Arab countries, as you know, have either official or unofficial relations with Israel. Egypt and Jordan, the two neighboring states of Israel, are indeed countries with ambassadors in Israel and vice versa. And they have a relatively, quote-unquote, normal relationship with Israel. So they can scarcely object to our visiting. The Palestinians are the ones who might most feel let down. I think that has to be attended to, and I hope it has been attended to.
And one reason, of course, Mr. Tharoor, that has been said is responsible for us sort of not escalating the relationship to another level has been the sensitivity to Muslim opinion here in India. Many feel that India perhaps stayed away in the message that would send any proximity with Israel would send to India's Muslims. That's something that Mr. Owaisi has also underscored yesterday, of course, highlighting the absence of a Ramallah visit. How significant do you believe that is?
Well, look, domestic considerations are always important to a government. And it's fair to say that our government or governments of which we were a part have traditionally had more receptivity to the sensitivities of our domestic opinion, particularly Muslim opinion, than the BJP has tended to have. So this is really a question you need to address to the government. Are they indifferent to the views of Indian Muslims about this visit? Do they want to reach out to the Muslim community and explain why it's important, or do they just feel they'll have to lump it? As far as we are concerned, if we were in this position, certainly we would have conducted a certain amount of domestic outreach before committing to a visit like this, just to make sure that our own people understood why this relationship is important for India, which it certainly is, and why, therefore, the time had come to be open about the relationship.
Time has come to be open and, of course, escalated to an other level, as we've been seeing. Like I said, it's being described as a marriage made in heaven. Those are the words that we used there to describe the relationship between the two countries, a marriage made in heaven there. Well, let's just get our other guests onto the program now. I'm joined by Abhijit Iyer Mitra, Senior Visiting Fellow, Institute of Peace and Conflict Studies, Vivek Kachu, former Secretary, Ministry of External Affairs, with us. We're also joined from Israel on Skype by Padmaja Ruparel, President and Co-Founder of the Indian Angel Network, the startup connection, of course, figuring very prominently in that dialogue there between the two leaders. Also joining us, Nicolas Blarel, Assistant Professor of International Relations, University of the Netherlands. Thanks all so much for taking our time to be with us on the program there. Vivek Kachu, sir, let me start by asking you, like we said, it's been described as historic, a path-breaking visit. There's, of course, every sign that that is exactly how it has panned out. Just see the importance that both sides have attached to this visit. We've seen editorials there in Israel describe the prime minister as the most important prime minister of the world. Those are the kind of headlines that we've seen. So clearly tremendous importance and significance. What has changed since the 90s, you know, when, of course, there was just so much suspicion and a fair amount of angst also when dealing with Israel?
Well, I look upon our relations with Israel after we established diplomatic ties in 1992 as an incremental process. All through the 90s and then the first 17 years of this century, our ties have intensified, and gradually we have opened up to acknowledging these ties. After all, the first the diplomatic relationship was established by Narasimha Rao, and that process was carried forward in stages gradually by Atal Bihari Vajpayee, by Manmohan Singh, and now Prime Minister Modi has cemented that process by putting a firm stamp of the prime ministerial visit. And I, for one, am happy that he has had a standalone visit to Israel, because that sends a signal that we are willing to deal with West Asian countries on a bilateral basis directly, state-to-state relations with them, and that we will not allow relations, as Shashi Tharoor put it well, that we will not allow relations with a third country to impede the process and progress of our relationship with any particular country. And Prime Minister Modi, one last thing, I think has said prepared well for this visit. He's gone there after 3 years of his prime ministership. He has visited Saudi Arabia, the UAE, he has visited Iran, he has welcomed the Palestinian president. So he's had all bases covered. And for the Israelis, of course, this is a very important moment, because in a manner of speaking, India was that elusive prize which every Israeli prime minister sought. And as Netanyahu said, that we've been waiting for an Indian prime minister for 70 years.
Well, that, of course, was very significant there. Abhijit here, Mitra, would you agree that all those who said, you know, is it really possible to de-hyphenate, as it's known, the relationship with Palestine and that with Israel, the Palestinian issue? Mr. Karju making the point that, yes, we've done it and we've perhaps shown that it can happen successfully. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I think de-hyphenation is required, and I'm glad Modi's done it. That said, we also have to look at our own ties with the Palestinians, for example. What Israel faces with Palestine is no different in a sense than what India faces with Pakistan. President Abbas, for example, continues to name squares and monuments in Palestine after suicide bombers, martyrs as they call them, and things like that. And in many ways, that is a lot like what Pakistan does to us, not arresting certain terrorists we want, encouraging, glorifying terrorism in a certain sense. And I don't know how the de-hyphenation specifically works, but I certainly think we need to reevaluate our ties with Palestine, because if we want support, more vocal support on Pakistan, we certainly can't afford to have double standards on whose terror we condone and whose terror we condemn.
Okay, fair enough. That's, of course, a good point. Nicholas Blood, like, come in at this point. Is terror the one issue that unites both sides, Israel and India, the one thing that's bringing us together in this fashion, in this very significant fashion?
I mean, yes. So, as the Prime Minister, both Prime Ministers have mentioned over time and during this visit, they face a common threat of global terrorism, growing radicalization. So they mentioned that as being something that links them. They want to encourage cooperation. This was also the case to some degree during the previous BJP government, under Vajpayee government. It was mentioned by National Security Advisor Rajesh Mishra in a famous speech in Washington at the American Jewish Committee. So terrorism and a common fight against terrorism has been something that's been
pushing at least the BJP in favoring relations with Israel. That being said, I mean, it's not the one main driver of this relationship. The defense relationship, the security relationship, which goes beyond counterterrorism, is obviously something that's been promoting and pushing for this partnership. And other elements that have been mentioned over the visit, whether it is agriculture, cooperation, space technology, water management, these are other things that have been emphasized by the two prime ministers. So I wouldn't limit the relationship just to counterterrorism.
And that's, of course, a good point. It brings me to my question for Padmaja, you know, there's just been so much focus on entrepreneurs and startup space, and there's, of course, been cooperation in other areas. Look at agriculture, look at irrigation and all of that. So would this be a fine time, given the focus on startups, to say that we are widening this relationship beyond just defense, which is how traditionally we've seen interaction and the relationship between the two countries?
Absolutely, Natasha, I completely agree with you. I think this is bringing a Startup India and Startup Nation together, and creating a bridge between the two countries, a startup bridge where we can bring in innovation and entrepreneurship to really build a new partnership. Today, as we speak, IAN, Indian Angel Network, has launched its Israel operations in Tel Aviv. We are already looking at young startups. As we speak, we are listening to their pitches, diligencing them, and seeing how we can actually bring them into the investment fold and leverage our Indian markets. So it's a very interesting phase. We have spoken, you know, there are Israeli investors who are looking at investing with us through the IEN network into India and other countries. So I think we are starting on something quite significant, quite historic, in creating a very new partnership which will hopefully bring benefits to both our communities.
Okay. Vivekanju, how significant do you believe that is? That this is a very clear message that has been sent out, even in the public engagements that the Indian Prime Minister has made over there, that we're not just looking at defense. Let's look at the kind of issues that Padmaja there is pointing out, that we just have a much wider relationship and a more sort of normal contact in that sense as it's being described.
Look, I for one believe that there is much that we can gain in different areas of technology, in different sectors from Israel. But having said that, I am also conscious that the Indian situation is vastly different from the Israeli situation. Of course, we should learn techniques in agriculture for arid areas. We should learn water conservation. An agreement was signed between the government of UP and an authority in Israel for the Ganga cleanup. But on the Ganga cleanup, for instance, for the Hindus, the Ganga is no ordinary river. And it is not only contaminated through chemical effluents. There is a certain culture. Now, I'm not quite sure whether the technologies that we get from Israel will be able to address this. And finally, in all these areas, there is a certain characteristic to Israeli society. There is a sense of discipline. I'm not quite sure whether when it comes to, say, the Ganga cleanup, environment, etc., whether the technologies that we get from Israel will be sufficient to address our problems. Okay. I'm not underrating their importance, but I'm just saying that we'll have to be conscious to adapt them very carefully, calibrating them for our interests
in
India.
But Bija, would you like to respond to that? We can't just sort of perhaps copy-paste their example and their success here, be it in the area that Mr. Kharju has identified or perhaps even in entrepreneurship?
No, I hear what Mr. Kharju said, and I hear very much. I think that is where it becomes very important that we don't just invest in technologies and innovations in Israel or any country for that matter, but we then, these are young startup entrepreneurs, we mentor them, we handhold them, we launch them in a slightly more cocoon business environment and help them actually gain the market access. It is very true that we have to bring in the doing business in India similarly as we have to learn how to do business in Israel for that matter. So I think when you have a network of investors, people who've been successful entrepreneurs across the world, both here, both in Israel or any part of the world, I think that value add that they do to they bring to the table to these startup young entrepreneurs, help them build companies, help them adapt to the new business environment and scale up. And ultimately, it does two more things. It brings benefits to our ecosystem. We have, you know, whether it's health tech, whether it's agriculture, whether it's water, sanitation, whatever. I think it brings benefit in actually filling these gaps and sort of building new models, building new propositions.
And very perhaps looking at their best practices and seeing what we can take. Yeah.
Yes.
I see what you're saying.
I think that is where mentoring and marketing help.
Okay. Abhijit Mitra, coming there again on a different point, which is of course on the more muted response that we are seeing on the Arab world. The point, of course, that that Mr. Tharoor made was that Iran was a key factor, and that seems to be one reason why the Arab world is sort of largely quiet in bringing this up in a more forceful way.
Sorry, Natasha. I'm just going to very quickly, before I answer your question, take it back to agriculture and water.
Sure.
I think we need to put this entire relationship in perspective. Mm-hmm. Our total trade relationship with Israel is about $2 billion. Mm-hmm. Now, that was the total trade relationship we had with Pakistan about a few years back. Mm-hmm. Now it's dropped to about $1.1 billion. Mm-hmm. Our total trade with to West Asia and North Africa is close to about $200 billion, mm-hmm. 100 times that volume. Mm-hmm. We also need to understand that Israel is a very advanced, developed first world country, and we're still pretty much an agricultural third world country. There are certain things, you saw that report in several newspapers, where Indian engineers, 85% of them don't even have cognitive skills, leave alone problem solving skills.
Right.
So you're looking at a fundamental market mismatch out here. This is skills and talents that are very high value addition that you're trying to absorb into a country that has very low value addition in its engineers. That aside, I'd also like to point to Prime Minister Narendra Modi's tweets a few days before he left Israel saying we needed more drip irrigation. Mm-hmm. Now, there are chronic structural problems in India why we can't adopt drip irrigation the way he wants us to. Today, Prime Minister Netanyahu gave, in my opinion, a particularly ill-advised interview saying he showed Prime Minister Modi during his visit to a greenhouse how to deliver nutrients to plants using drones. Mm. Now, agriculture in India is subsistence agriculture. Mm. I mean, it's a bit like Marie Antoinette saying, let them eat cake, if you're going to say things like, well, let's use drones to deliver nutrients to plants. That said, Iran, I think one of the things, one of the reasons that this relationship hasn't really been, I mean, this coming out of the relationship hasn't really been condemned by the Arab world is that most of the Khalij, the Gulf countries, are pretty happy with their little coy and cozy relationship with the Israelis in opposing Iran. Mm-hmm. And the brilliance of this visit is the timing, I don't know if it was deliberate or just sheer coincidence, is that Prime Minister Modi has chosen the exact same time when criticism from the overwhelming majority of the Sunni Arab world would be the least of any prime ministerial visit, really, to Israel. So optimal timing, I think it's just all the stars have aligned.
Okay, Mr. Kaji, you want to make a point?
Yes, I think there's a general point that I want to make. The Palestinian issue, to my mind, does not resonate with the Arab world as it's used to in the past. Besides, the Palestinians themselves are fractured today. So given that, and given the sectarian conflicts in the Arab world, I think we really shouldn't worry too much about Arab reaction, which, as you've rightly noted, is very muted.
Okay, but what about Mr. Owaisi's comments or Shashi Tharoor saying that, you know, perhaps the government ought to have reached out more to domestic politicians and Indian public, really, to explain just why this trip was, as it's called, being de-hyphenated? Do you believe there's any merit in that, Mr. Kaju?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. With all respect to Shashi, I'll give you my reason. I think it is wrong, inherently wrong, to say that a particular community in India, as far as in this case the Muslims, do not participate in a sense of nationalism along with the rest. That is
right.
One.
Okay.
Two. If you see the history of our incremental process with regard to Israel, when has the Muslim community protested? After all, starting from 1992, we've had visits of Israelis to India. The Israeli Prime Minister has visited India, and Israeli President has come here. Our president has gone there. So, as I said, this is part of a process, and the Muslims have never protested. So it can be manufactured. Yes, one last point. Yes, there are certain ideological hang-ups with some people, going back to the 50s, 60s, and 70s, going back to the Cold War, going back to the sense of injustice to the Palestinians by the very formation of Israel. But that apart, the world has moved on in these 70 years.
Nicholas, would you agree with that? The world has sort of moved on. This is clearly great indication that that is perhaps very true.
Yeah, no, I mean, we're no longer in the situation that Mr. Kaju was talking about in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. I mean, an interesting mirroring situation is Abhijit was talking about that there are other concerns in the region. You have to remember, 1992 was also the opening of diplomatic relations with Israel was also facilitated by the fact that there were divisions over the Iraq War that happened. The Middle East was divided. There were other concerns other than the Israel-Palestine issue. The peace process had started, so there was a structural opportunity for India to establish diplomatic relations with Israel. Today, Modi is in a similar, I think, situation. There's the issue about the Qatar and the rest of the Gulf states. Iran is becoming becoming a salient issue, dividing the Middle East. So you have an opportune moment for Modi to come visit. Mm-hmm. That being said, I think Mr. Kaju and Shashi Tharoor have mentioned earlier that it took 3 years for Modi to visit. He first visited most of the Gulf states. He visited Iran. He kind of prepared the ground at the diplomatic level for this visit to not lead to any diplomatic repercussions.
Right, he perhaps has managed to please most, if not all, there, like the point Mr. Kaju made right at the beginning. But then, given the one panelist who's there right now in Israel, now, you know, journalists love looking at body language. We've done that, and that sort of seems to be really spot on. The commentary is really spot on. But as someone who's there, give us a sense of the buzz around this, you know, around media or around just people in Israel. What are you picking up?
Oh, there is so much excitement. There's so much excitement about Prime Minister Modi's visit. I think the red carpet has been laid out in every which way that one could think of. Anyone I meet, I think they do see India as very, very central. They see it as a country that they cannot miss, they cannot avoid. They have to engage. Whether it's startups, whether it's companies, whether it's academicians, universities, and we've been meeting the government, bureaucracy, and everywhere I think there's huge excitement. And I think the excitement is not just the trip. That, of course, has its own excitement.
But the promise of the future.
But I think it's more about the potential and what we can now do in future. It's not easy. It is going to be a path that we will sort of evolve and walk through. But I think there is clearly a positive commitment to say, let's try out, let's walk the path together and create something, which is, I think, a very, very good start.
A marriage made in heaven, which perhaps will last here on earth. Thank you all so much for your time this evening. It's, of course, been the big, big story. All the updates will come your way right here on NDTV 24/7.